Welcome to Teachers Teaching Teachers. It is the last day of September, 2009, September 30th, 2009, and we are beginning a three-week, with Troy Hicks from Central Michigan University. Is that correct, Troy?
That is correct, yes.
Welcome. Clap, 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 clap.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, yep, right. It is going to be 3 weeks. Yep.
And Troy will tell us a little more in a bit about what those 3 weeks might look like. Troy has written a book called The Digital Writing Workshop, which is available from Heinemann. And in the 3 weeks, if you didn't get your book yet, please get your book. But you can join us anyhow. We have tonight with us also Penny Kittle from New Hampshire, Sarah Beauchamp Hicks, who will give us her little history there in a second. Chris Sloan from Judge Morrill. Chris is an old friend of the show. In fact, almost a co-host, I would say, Chris.
Yeah, anyway, I'm sensing that.
He's sensing that, yeah. Anyway, and Troy, I just wanted to put this in a bit of context and then throw the show up over to you to kind of host and talk to these teachers who I assume you've featured them in your book. Is that right?
Correct.
Is that a fair way to say it?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And in this way, you know, I don't remember if you remember the conversation, but as you were in a moment, oh, I don't know, a while ago, where you weren't, the writing was, you know, coming slowly, and you were wondering, you know, what am I writing? Other people have written this book and stuff like that. I encourage you to, I don't know if you remember, but I was kind of saying that I think what we have developing here is a genre almost, or a, you know, it's a, there are enough books out now that we can almost call it a field of study. Mm-hmm. And you might mention others, but I just wanted to mention a few that have been on our show. Back in February, we had Richard Beach on with teaching writing using blogs, wikis, and other digital tools, I think. Kind of a long title, yeah. And then in June, we did three shows with Ann Harrington and Kevin Hodgins and Charlie Moran around teaching the new writing. And now your book, The Digital Writing Workshop. So I just wanted to kind of pose that as your opening question, if I could. Where does your book fit there, or would you like to put it in a different context? Or
I think that's a great question. I actually think it connects to something else. You know, our friend, you mentioned the teaching the new writing, and Kevin just the other day in the NWP site leader's Ning posted this question, like, are we finally in the moment? Like, we've all been talking for, you know, years about whether we're actually, you know, making any progress and feeling like we're doing something to, you know, get digital writing and technology integrated into writing, you know, just as kind of a natural course of things. And so I thought that was just a really timely question that he posed out there, and there's some conversation going on in that Ning, which of course I don't have the URL to right now, but I'll try to grab it. But I think that what you just said is really accurate. You know, there it seemed to me like for a while there was a lot of conversation, very theoretical conversation about what it meant to be immersed in hypertext and digital video, and you know, what did this all mean at a kind of theoretical level. And then we had some, you know, great resources come out in the last 3-4 years about, you know, okay, here's what a blog is, and here's how you use it, and this and that and the other thing. And the way I tried to position the book, and this is how I pitched the book originally, and I'm hoping that this is what it actually accomplishes and may help us continue to push our thinking in this way, is that I didn't see anybody talking about writing pedagogy and the technology tools all at the same time in language that teachers were accustomed to. And I grew up in the Nancy Atwell, Lucy Calkins, Donald Graves, and numerous others writing workshop methodology, you know, as I was learning how to teach and working at writing centers and becoming part of the writing project. And so that kind of writing process, writing workshop methodology, meeting and the tried and true practices of that writing workshop methodology matching up with all these digital tools that folks like yourself have been talking about for so long. And I mean, I definitely tip my hat to you and to Chris and everyone else that I've worked with through NWP, because as we've gone through all these experiences of Tech Matters and the annual meetings and these shows on teachers teaching teachers, it's really helped me start to think about how we can say, okay, what does it mean to be a good teacher of writing, and what does it mean to be integrating technology purposefully? And now, how can we start talking about all of that in the same conversation? And hence, you know, I took this idea of digital writing and the writing workshop. They blended together very nicely, and we have the digital writing workshop. So here we are.
Great. Nice introduction. One of the things about being a host is you get to lay back and let your guests talk. So you'll get to do that tonight a little bit. Troy, thank you for that very complete introduction there. Why don't you reintroduce our guests and have them jump in here, and I'll lay back and let you take off here a little bit.
Okay. Well, I'll let each of them introduce themselves in turn here. As you said just a moment ago, Chris Sloan is here, who is virtually a co-host for your show. Penny Kittle, who is an author in her own right and wrote the foreword to the book. And then Sarah Beauchamp-Hicks, who is the tech liaison for the Upper Peninsula Writing Project. And as the director up there said, we want to collaborate with you when you start a new writing project. But she didn't know that collaboration would involve the two of us getting married and having her move down here to the Lower Peninsula and now working for the Chippewa River Writing Project. And she's a doctoral student at Michigan State. So I think the order of things tonight, we're going to be talking about choice and inquiry and what it means to teach in a writing workshop. And I was hoping that Penny could start the conversation, and maybe we'll just have people introduce themselves in turn as we go along. And she wrote a very kind and generous foreword to the book, and I'm hoping she could talk a little bit about her knowledge of writing workshop and where she sees things going now that she's tried some of these digital tools and is just thinking about this stuff in different directions as well. So, Penny, can I have you introduce yourself and just feel free to jump right into the conversation?
All right. Thanks. I teach here in Conway, New Hampshire, and I'm a high school English teacher, first block, and then a K-12 literacy coach the rest of the day. I was sent Troy's book by an editor at Heinemann because my book on writing workshop in high school talks a lot about the same people that influenced Troy and how I've tried to use all of that really smart thinking about teaching writing's process in the work that I do every day in my high school. And when I read the manuscript, I immediately wrote back and said, you know, this is the first thing I've read that takes all of this really good thinking about teaching process and teaching writing and marries it with digital tools. Instead of treating digital tools as something else like an add-on, this was about reaching the goals that we're going for in a writing process workshop and using all of this new technology to make those things come alive for kids and to help them kind of negotiate all of these new avenues for communicating. So I thought it was just terrific. And when I wrote back and said all those great things, they said, oh, maybe perhaps you'd like to write the foreword. Which it was a great little process lesson for me because I had never written anything and I had to figure out how to write one. So, Troy, I love your book. I think it's terrific. I actually have a group of four teachers who are reading it as a Lit Circle group in my UNH class this semester.
Oh, wow.
So I think it'll be interesting to see what they do with it because we're all talking about all of these connections that we can make to the work that we're doing currently. And all of us are trying a different digital tool that we haven't used. And I'm wondering if tonight counts, since I've never done one of these chat things. But they won't let me get away with that.
I would say so.
You know, great potential in what Troy's offering us, a way to look at just the RSS feeds, for one, and helping kids design their own list of resources that will come to them that they want to read regularly is something I've never even thought about. So that's a great place for me to start.
Penny, this is Paul.
Yeah.
How long have you been doing the tech integration and so forth?
Probably in the last 5 years is when I've really got interested. I had worked with a generous donor in our community, the New Hampshire Charitable Foundation, to get a fully integrated writing lab with, you know, technology that we hadn't had in the building before, which was we could move between PCs and Macs because I'm a Mac user and our school's all PCs, and we're now all wireless. We're in a new system. We have a laptop cart, and what that allows us to do is the kids are now creating movies, a lot of digital composition in different genres, was the first big step that we made. And right now we're participating in some global communities with different, I mean, like one of them in Afghanistan is a Ning, so we're a part of a Ning. My classroom is trying to find ways to connect with kids all over the world and doing some, you know, we started off with just a simple blog as a class, but we've are starting to try out all these different ways.
Stop me. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know. You go ahead. You're fine.
Yeah, I just one follow-up, and I just wanted to kind of clarify. Now, you're out of the classroom most of the time. Is that right now? I mean, working with other teachers? How long have you been doing that is what I meant. Yeah,
I have a 90-minute class of seniors. It's called Writing, and it's the one that was the basis for the book right beside them. That group, I teach every semester. So the rest of the day, then, I'm either in an elementary, middle school, or part of the high school. Hmm. I've been doing that for 12 years.
Oh, wow. So that's great. Okay. Back to you.
Okay. Well, yeah, and I guess my follow-up question, and first of all, my thanks to you, because I do appreciate the foreword. And my question to you is, what do you think is most compelling about all of this? Like, if you had to use your crystal ball and look into the future just a little bit, thinking about the writing workshop, what do you think, Penny, would be something that teachers will want to be aware of? And I don't know if I'm asking that necessarily in terms of the tools or in terms of just the writing workshop approach or a little bit of everything, but as you're doing professional development and writing and talking with people, what are the things that you see happening, and how do some of the things that were brought up in the book lead into that?
I think I'm always struck when I'm out doing PD work in other states and places, is how few people are using digital tools. Like, even just making movies really helped my students think differently about composition. And it is only one of the many things that we can use. When I think about the future and I think about what our students are doing, my class, we can post the different drafts that kids are doing, and then kids can comment on each other's work. You know, like right now I have my email open, Skype, this chat room that I'm kind of following what people are writing, and I was really tempted to go check my email a minute ago, and that's exactly what my kids will do in the lab, is they'll have up the website that's got the earrings they want to buy for prom, and they'll have in the background somebody else's draft that they're reading, and their headphones are on, and they're listening, and they're, you know, they interact in so many different ways with all of these places they can visit. They pop into a Ning and they leave a comment and then they move on. So one of the things that struck me when you asked this question is that I'm asked everywhere, where do I find good mentor texts to study in a genre that we're looking at? And technology is such a great way. You can, you know, we have a series of bookmarks of places that I know they're going to find good stuff, from Mitch Albom to Leonard Pitts to Rick Riley too. And that constant check out what these people are writing about this week. You know, we all went after civility when Kanye did that great little diss of, what's her name, Taylor Swift. All of my students wanted to know what different blogs, et cetera, and we haven't been able to bring in all those voices so easily into our classrooms before.
Yeah, I think that idea that you just mentioned about mentor texts and starting to think about the fact that, you know, when I first learned that term mentor text, it was like you had classic pieces of literature that you pulled from, or, you know, you might be pulling something from the newspaper that morning or a news weekly or something like that. And now your mentor text could change from hour to hour, you know, given what students are finding and what they're able to share and what they're able to produce on their own. I think that's an interesting position it puts teachers in, where, you know, we've always been accustomed to say we know what we have in terms of the content, what we're supposed to cover, and now suddenly the content continues to shift right underneath us. So That's an interesting point that you make. And then also thinking about what a text is anymore, you know, when we watch a video or when we look at something that has hyperlinks, and how do we, what kind of language do we use to talk about that? It seems like six traits isn't quite adequate enough anymore, or at least not in the ways it used to be, because when you talk about something like the organization of a text, it's entirely different whether you're trying to produce a video or whether you're trying to create a wiki page or something like that. So the landscape keeps changing, you know. So,
I think, you know, just the Kanye example, my students, every kid today is really immediate. They want to write about stuff that matters now, that they care about, and they were all kind of angry about that. And I had drawn in my notebook at a meeting kind of a link between all these things that happened at once, Serena and all of these, what I would call evidence or pieces I would use in an argument. And then the USA Today front page story was what's happened to civility. And each of the photographs in their kind of teaser on the paper were my arguments, a picture of Serena, a picture. And to bring that in and say to kids, you know, here I was composing this thing in my head that I was going to write. And then USA Trump me, they got totally what I was going to write. But where else could I write it? How could I write it? Leads them back to all of these ways you can communicate. You know, they asked me what would my tweet be about what was bothering me. And that one is really challenging. 140 characters, you know, it's just a hard thing to write.
Well, yeah, and just the whole notion of, you know, the media as well as the genres, and things are changing, and the possibilities that one might find in being limited to only 140 characters. So all these things keep happening, and we do try to get kids to produce these texts in different ways. But like, one of the things for me, and I'd be curious to hear more of your thoughts on this, is how, you know, when I grew up in the writing workshop, you know, as I was coming to learn how to teach that way and try to implement that in my classroom, I found that, you know, you wanted to have audiences for your kids, and you tried to help them find audiences outside of your classroom, but usually it turned into a classroom anthology, and even, you know, maybe somebody got a letter to the editor in the paper, or, you know, something in the yearbook or something like that. And you could have, you know, readings and parent nights and stuff like that. But ultimately, it still felt very classroom-ish, I don't know, for lack of a better term, the writing. And so I wonder if you could talk just a little bit about that, and then I think it would make a good segue into what Chris and Paul are doing with Youth Voices. If you could talk just a little bit about how you're seeing audience and purpose change as you're working in these writing workshops, and what you're hearing from teachers and students, and how the digital tools are influencing audience and purpose.
Well, I think that, you know, one of our big mistakes always with writing workshop was that too often the texts were just for the teacher, really. You know, it's kind of like you said, if we wanted to be honest, we had these anthologies, but the kids didn't read them a lot. And how did we put their texts in front of each other enough? And when I started like designing units around a genre, I would always leave room for the ones that were in process in the midst of that unit. So there'd be blank spaces where kids could volunteer to have their draft be the subject that day in class. Well, all of that is so streamlined with technology, because kids will post their drafts the night before and will come in, and there will be drafts that we could all go to, either on Google Docs, which is what a lot of the kids like, or just within our own server in our school. We can post them into a folder. And that fact that they can be constantly hearing from other kids and having their arguments challenged, even just within our school, I think has broadened the sense of audience for my students, because they want to be heard by their peers a whole lot more than they want to hear from us.
And have you found that the response that peers are giving is richer? I mean, that's always a critique too of why teachers say, oh, I tried peer editing once and it didn't work for me. Are you finding the responses to be as rich as the writing that they're producing? I mean, it goes hand in hand in some sense. Maybe I'm asking a leading question, but I just wonder what you're noticing about their actual response process.
Well, I find that, you know, it's absolutely true that whatever language I'm using to talk about writing is the language they use to talk to each other. And so as I do all the conferring that I do and the comments that I leave on drafts, I will tend to hear those same things, you know, echoed in their thoughts. So if I'm really focused on the things that matter in that piece of writing, like, I don't see how you are backing this up. This evidence doesn't convince me. Or did you think about the order of how you put these things in? Those kinds of questions then appear in their questions to each other. And I think that all of that is such a teaching opportunity, you know, the kind of comments we give each other. And the fact that my comments are public on another student's draft is just broadening how much they're learning about the particular genre we're in.
And there is something, of course, about making your own response to text more public for students to listen into and hear more about. There's a little conversation here in the chat, and someone asked Paul if they were joking, but has anyone here done Writer's Workshop? I'm hoping that the audience has a little bit of background on that. And honestly, if not, and I'm not trying to sound silly here, but if you need some background on that, we can certainly throw some links and things like that in here.
Can I just explain? I threw it up there and then said whatever that is, just because I think a lot of times we say that word, those two words, and everybody's doing something kind of different, and you know,
I just
wanted to also encourage everybody to keep interrupting each other more, Chris.
It's so impolite.
No. That's why I wanted to encourage it. So if you have a question or thought, please jump in just like I did. But yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to transition to Chris here in a second. But I just wanted to add to that idea too. You know, Katie Wood Ray has this wonderful vignette that she starts one of the books, which is escaping me right now. I think it's The Writing Workshop, Working Through the Hard Parts, and They're All Hard Parts, or something to that effect. But, you know, she describes this wonderful classroom with the kids all working, and some of them are off task, but most of them are on task and have that, you know, workman-like behavior that Atwell describes and other folks. But then she also goes on to say, you know, a lot of us talk about, you know, we're doing the writing process, you know, quote-unquote, doing the writing process, as compared to what does it mean to really teach in a writing workshop? And one of the things that I've started talking about in terms of digital writing with students, I mean, it started out, I was just being a little sarcastic and cynical and just saying, well, you know, that can everyone recite the writing process? Oh, pre-writing or brainstorming, pre-writing, drafting, you know, and I'm like, does anybody really do that? Did anybody ever really do that to begin with? And then now, does anybody really do that anyway? You know, and I think that as we think about, you know, talk what language we choose. Yeah, I'm really cautious not to. I try to talk about workshop approach, like that's the pedagogy. And then yes, kids are in the writing process. And I took that frame of thinking from Katie Wood Ray, but even now thinking about how we do that digitally, I think we really have to understand that yes, you know, kids are in a constant state of workshopping. So, and I think
also the using part I think is critical there. Are you using the process to create something in writing, you know, digitally or otherwise, as opposed to doing the process? I think that helps. And somebody asked a question way back up in the comments about, is the place that my kids are posting private or public? And I just wanted to say it is private in our school district, or in the one that I use in my classroom is in my classroom.
Yeah.
So the rest of the world can't read the comments or see their drafts.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, and someone also mentioned the NPR story this afternoon, which was very good as well. So maybe we can find a link for that. Let's transition here to Chris really quickly. And I think Chris and Paul and you both can talk about youth voices. But the particular...
Susan, too.
And, yeah, everybody.
If we can pull our way from the chat a little bit. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. The particular piece that I was able to highlight in the book was what you both shared at our presentation together last year at NCTE, where you had the young woman, Katie, who wrote her response to the Obama election night speech in Chicago. She happened to be there, and I thought that was very powerful, a way to think about just how quickly and how immediately responses can happen in a digital environment. And so as you two are thinking about, you know, what it means to teach in a digital writing workshop and have that approach and give students choices in their research and writing and have them constantly be inquiring into new topics and responding to others. What are some of the thoughts that you have, some of the strategies that you take to frame that, and some of the results you've seen with your students?
Well, you know, the whole thing of the workshop approach. I think at its core, you know, student choices at its core. So, you know, the students get to choose their inquiries because they naturally have them and that's what they want to learn. And there's some prescribed curriculum. But for a lot of the writing that I do, you know, it's student choice. And so obviously last year about this time, a lot of the students I taught were really interested in the election. And so Katie, as it turned out, happened to be in Chicago for election night. She was there for another reason, and she's from Utah. And then she convinced her mom to go down to Grant Park, and she wrote about that on her blog on Youth Voices. And, you know, everyone can read that, so this is open to the world. And so one of Paul's students read it and kind of touched a nerve, which led to a discussion about race in America. And I think one of the things that turned that happened as a result of that conversation was that it was a conversation that I don't think would have happened in my pre-20th century classroom. I've been teaching 25 years, so you know, I'm well versed in the workshop approach. But the one thing that seemed really different about this was that a conversation took place from, you know, a Caucasian girl in Salt Lake City and a Latina in New York City, and they had very different worldviews. And that was one of the interesting things that came about, was just like their different takes on that piece of writing and on the issue of race. And they started out really far apart, really even antagonistically. But near the end of a series of things, which was like a conversation on the Youth Voices space, conversation between Paul and I as teachers, between Paul and me as teachers, and then on a podcast, you know, to me that seemed different than the classroom that I used to teach, you know, before, say, about 2000. And it's almost made me think lately about conversation as a genre. I don't know. The way we comment to each other in these spaces. And so we do make conscious effort to try to teach how we talk to each other when we respond to each other in those spaces.
I was just going to say, very specifically, the young woman from Utah, what's her name again?
Katie.
You said Katie, yeah. You know, if for her, she saw herself as one of the more, I don't know what else to say, but one of the more liberal people on her block. And to get kind of characterized as conservative by my student was surprising to her, I think. So, like, who you are, your identity, when you go out into the world is really interesting to kind of think about. And my student also had to reevaluate, you know that she was who she was in relationship to this young woman in Utah. So those were really powerful things about identity, I think, that happened in that conversation.
Cool. Very cool.
Yeah, I was trying to type a question here for you. I'll put it in the chat room too, but also ask, you know, one of the pillars of a writing workshop approach is that we build a community within our classroom. And obviously you're doing that, but you're also building community across classroom. And, you know, I was having a conversation in professional development the other day, and it's this idea, like, someone's like, well, if you put writing on the internet, you know, who cares? It's kind of that, you know, if the tree falls in the woods and nobody's there to listen, well, if a writer posts to a blog and no one's there to respond, could you two talk a little bit about how you help students consciously and carefully develop that sense of community and maybe some of the activities you invite them to do and things like that? And then I'll also throw this same question in a much shorter version in the chat room so other people can respond as well.
Well, I'll start. But Paul has put together some really helpful guides on how to respond to each other's work. And so I've used those, and kind of an interesting thing happened lately where one of the students...
That's a great story. Yeah, tell that. Go ahead. Which I love that response. Yeah, yeah.
Cookie cutter?
Yeah, yeah.
One of my students said, you know, what's up with all these cookie cutter responses here? It seems like all people are doing is just... you know, following a pretty clear format. And it is a Google Doc template that it's based off of. But I told my students that, you know, I want you to do that form once to internalize what I think are elements of good conversation online, and that would be like, and it's the same thing as good conversation with when we're face to face, but like, you know, when we talk to people, we want to know that they listen to us and that they hear what we have to say, that they're making connections about what we're talking about, and that there's kind of this invitation for further conversation. So the Google template, you know, explicitly has them do that. But then my point was, if you can make a comment that really ultimately leads to further conversation, then I think that's a good comment.
But, you know, I just, what was funny was one of your students responded with very cookie cutter response too.
Yeah,
right?
He's a clever
that
one.
Was,
yeah.
That was clever. Anyway. Okay. You know, Troy, I want to say that we certainly don't have that figured out. And I struggle all the time with some students who feel like they want more community inside my classroom than I'm providing them, because I throw them out really fast. So, you know, I, and some teachers feel like they want to nurture that more in their own class before they go out. And, you know, so those are issues.
What do you mean by out? Is that what you mean by when you send them out into the world? On the web? Yeah. Is that what you mean by out?
Yeah, that's right. Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, in the second week of class, they're publishing on Youth Voices, which is out there to everybody. So that kind of, you know, so all I'm saying is that we are constantly kind of negotiating that question, where the community gets built. But it does seem to me that if the topic is choice tonight, one of the advantages of having a larger community is that I can like a particular kind of music and want to write about that particular kind of music and find somebody in Utah who likes that too. Or, you know, or I could be interested in some niche topic and can find more people outside of my immediate environment where I can connect. So I think some of that is important when that happens.
Got it. Another way, to go back to Katie's example, when she posted her thing in class or when the class first started coming across it and the discussion we had in our own classroom, everybody was just like, wow, that's really cool that you were there for Obama's speech. Yeah. And it was all affirmation and, you know, a little bit of envy. They wish they were there. But it wasn't until someone with a very different perspective entered the conversation, that was Paul's student, Dominique, that the discussion actually took a really powerful turn. So, again, we had the classroom community built in there, but it was, you know, it wasn't a very rich discussion as it turned out.
That's interesting.
Troy, we have an interesting conversation going on in the chat room, and I wanted to just kind of throw this out to our panelists, our discussion leaders. There's a lot of talk about safety online, and a lot of people are talking online but class to class. And you've described some wonderful Keep It Real kinds of stories of students speaking across schools online. So what can we do to help people not worry less about safety, because that's certainly important, but keeping that in mind, figure out why what might be a value to go outside the classroom for online discussions or when it is appropriate.
I'm going to just deflect that question right back to you guys, because I think you have much better, more specific answers than that, except to just say that, you know, another one of our colleagues, Bud Hunt, Bud the teacher, you know, I've heard him talk about this before, and he puts it pretty simply. He's like, bullying issues are a problem online, but anybody ever experienced that on a school bus when you're growing up? Or a cafeteria, or a locker room, or a football field. That's what kids do. And so part of it, to me, is it's like this circular argument. Well, do we have to worry about safety? Well, yes, we do. We have to worry about privacy. But we really should be worried about that for kids everywhere. And it's this idea of creating the community, much like you have in Youth Voices, that contributes to that sense of safety. I don't know that, you know, that conversation that began with Katie's post would have happened necessarily face-to-face. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it would have. But I think there's some element of being online that allows kids to open up just a little bit more, too. So there's some positives to it as that. So
Go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say that one of the things that my kids like about the power of being online is if someone is a jerk, they just click them off. They just delete them, get rid of them. They move away from the site, or they, you know, I worked with a ninth grade the other day, and they felt such power in getting rid of someone who was annoying them, where you can't do that on the school bus. So I think it's an interesting back and forth. Yes, there are idiots, but they can deal with them. And I also think that yesterday we had two authors from They Poured Fire on Us from the Sky visit our school. They're Lost Boys of Sudan, and they came to talk about the book. And my students were online immediately this morning looking for connections to relief workers, to schools that are happening in Sudan. There's this sense of taking something that's happened in their life and then gathering so much more information by being online that wasn't possible prior to now.
And the other thing is they already are building their online portfolio, whether we want to help them or not. You know, I mean, their Facebook, if that's their only online presence, is my point to my kids, then that doesn't show them for the depth of learning that they do. So that's the first thing. And but this is a discussion that I think could take quite a while. And we haven't really heard from Sarah, so.
Right. I think it could too. But I, you know, Jenny here in the chat room is, you know, making some points. And I think that what I'm hearing people say over and over again, both tonight and in the larger context of this, is that I think there's another thing we have to say first, and it's that clearly our professional organizations recognize that this is happening. You know, standards documents are changing. You know, curricular initiatives are changing. So this stuff is happening. And like Chris, you just said, kids are building their own portfolios one way or another. So why don't we show administrators positive examples of how kids are communicating using digital writing, reading and writing and responding to each other, and then telling them, you know, we want to be able to do these types of things. So anyway, that's kind of what I was trying to type here. So I'll finish that thought. And yeah, let's invite go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, I just had one thought I had earlier, and this is a little off, but experience today. My last year's 10th graders, I was talking to the teacher who has them now in 11th grade, and she is feeling very frustrated. You know, the class size is too big, she can't get something started with them. Etc. There are lots and lots of problems, which you know, are separate from some of the conversation we're having here tonight. But she showed me some of the stuff that she is not on the computers with them yet, and doesn't know if she can get there herself. She showed me some of the writing they did on paper, and what I could say to her is, you know what? And I'm going to spend some time to show her this tomorrow, is go look at what he wrote last year, and you can, like, surf through his whole blog and kind of see what his interests are and see how they developed over the last year and see where he's a strong writer and see where he has some weaknesses. You know, so I just wanted to mention that one of the things I think going forward that we're going to be able to have because of the digital writing is this archive of writing and other kinds of things that we'll be able to share with teachers as we go. Now, getting the time to go look at that stuff is another issue, but that's a note that I wanted to mention.
Also, Troy and Paul, I want to jump back in here because there's some conversation about sites being blocked, and I don't remember what number show it was, but maybe about a year ago, do you think, Paul, we had a conversation with some people who are actually in charge of blocking sites, and really what they said, and I think it's worth a mention here tonight to remind ourselves to figure out who is that person and ask, because very often it's actually not that hard to get sites unblocked.
Right, and just a quick footnote on that, and then we will transition over to Sarah. In a professional development, series of professional development workshops we were doing over the course of about a year and a half, you know, we had this very issue, oh, well, we can't get into Wikispaces, why even bother? Well, go back, talk to your tech coordinator. Go back. Well, we finally got to the point, these two teachers, they were very you know, persistent, but they were also getting frustrated. And finally, it's like, okay, just ask him to open up your wiki space, just that one domain. And then, you know, so kids can't, you know, escape to the whole wide world, and they know that it's right there. And so I think that's a strategy too that, you know, I think it was Jenny who chimed in a little bit earlier with that question and others. Like, if you have a tool that you're using, you can just get that particular domain rather than all of Wikispaces. Maybe that would bring a little more comfort level. So anyway, I think
I'll jump in right there, Troy, if you want. Actually, I have a good segue into that before I...
All right. You want to introduce yourself, too?
Oh, sure. I'm Sarah Beauchamp-Hicks, and I am originally from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. I was a technology liaison for the Upper Peninsula Writing Project. And last year at the annual meeting, met up with Troy after a professional relationship for a few years. And long story short, we're now married, and I'm living in Lansing, going to MSU in the Educational Technologies doctoral program, and we have five kids at home here, so life is exciting. What I was going to say about...
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you. Part of the conversation here, I've missed a little bit, been putting kids back to bed, but one of the main things I can tell those people out there that are frustrated is that it's a process, and if you keep talking and keep, like Troy pointed out, find the people who are in charge and show them all the different ways that you can utilize this in positive ways, that eventually things change. Sometimes it takes a long time, and it's very frustrating. Last year in Nagani, we had a year-long conversation about the use of YouTube, and sometimes it's about compromise. My position was very different as a resource room teacher, was very different from the computer lab teacher who had kids sitting at computers all day, as far as access to YouTube. And eventually what happened is we ended up with a teacher override. You know, I had read somewhere that they could set it up on the server that way. And so we started with that. And so at least when students posted their projects to YouTube, teachers were able to override it and play them in class, and then they could use them for instructional purposes. So just hang in there if you're you know, frustrated and working towards getting access. You just have to keep at it and keep the conversation moving.
Hey, Sarah.
Yes?
I had my students, these are my teacher students, post their projects to YouTube, and then they had used copyrighted music. You know how YouTube is clearing that out now?
Yeah.
So they put them up there, and YouTube took off their audio, so it took out everything, like all their voiceovers and everything, out of their projects. Have you ever had that happen?
Yes. And actually, I think, Troy, you just had a project that YouTube denied.
I did.
For copyright purposes. And we went, you ended up, I think, I directed you to a new site. What was the name of that again?
Vidler.
Vidler, yes. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And use that. But it's interesting. I think, Troy, you can speak to the process you went through to even appeal the denial.
Oh, I did. Yeah, I don't want to detract for too long. But, yeah, you know, YouTube has an appeal process for when they do that. And you can claim fair use under copyright, which I know has been talked about on this show, as well as other places recently. But I think the fact of the matter is that we really need to keep pushing on our fair use rights. I mean, I'm not going to elaborate much more on it now, but Paul and I, we were at EDUCON earlier this year and sat in a session with Renee Hobbs, who is one of the authors of that best practices for fair use document. And I don't know, Paul, if I'm speaking for you, but I'm definitely speaking for me. I just kept listening to her and going, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, everything I know about copyright and fair use is wrong. And we really need to continue exercising our rights about how we invite kids to use those types of materials. So anyway, that's another whole show's conversation. But so Sarah, do you want to talk a little bit about the ways that you're using the Wiki and Google Docs?
Sure. I'm no longer up there doing this, and I'm hoping that they're still doing it. But what we did was took a censorship project that I had designed that was a companion to reading the novel The Giver. And it kind of evolved over years. Like, I think we started this activity about 5 years ago when it was we use the web to do a worksheet type thing, and then we put the worksheet online and made links, and or actually the next step was that we put the worksheet on student on a flash drive so kids could open it up as a Word document and then use hyperlinks. And then it evolved from there into a web-based project. And from there, students were able to, you know, access all of the information and work through the activities. And then at the same time, they use their Google Docs. We have Google Apps for Education at our school where all of our freshmen get an account. And then from there, they keep that account all the way through high school. And so what we essentially created was, you know, an environment for collaboration through also the use of the wiki and this particular activity.
So in that one project, you could sort of see the last 5 years of web development.
you really could, you know, and that's another point along with the, you know, continual discussion is that it's, and as you all know, that all of these things with the web and with all of this new digital stuff is it's messy and it's not really clean and precise and all in order, that we kind of, you know, we revisit things and we look at them in different ways each year as we come back to different projects. And I think that's an exciting thing that's happening is that we're able to very easily, because of the digital nature of the work, go in and tweak it a little bit. And as different tools become available, we can add those to it. You know, I could foresee using Google Forms with this project now, you know, working on student inquiry projects.
Tell us a little more detail, though. What did it look like in the classroom and what were the kids actually doing on this project?
Well, in the final year of it, they worked in groups and they went to the wiki and they had, it started with a little excerpt from Judy Blume about, called Censorship, Who Decides and Why You Should Care. And, we directed them to different links. They had to watch a video and then we usually did this right around this time of the year, also during like band book time. And they basically just went through the activity and posted their comments on a Google Doc and shared it with each other. And I don't know, like the final project, I guess, was just kind of a reflective piece using all of the information that they gathered in the activity.
So I'm curious to know, how did you see students change in their perceptions of this project over the course of the years that you did it on, as they became more immersed in this digital writing process?
Well, for one thing, they were more engaged in the process. You know, with each addition of the tool, they got into it a little bit more. There was a lot more freedom, so to speak, in making their choices as far as the direction they took the project. I think they really like the collaborative nature of the Google Doc. And amazingly enough, I know I was reading in the chat rooms and in the chat room there was a lot of talk about bullying, but amazingly, I think when you put these tools in the students' hands and you have an ongoing discussion about, you know, appropriate behaviors and appropriate interactions, that amazingly they, you know, come to the table and they do the right thing. So we didn't have those kind of issues at all, in fact, in my experience with them. But so definitely more engagement. I think they were returning to their work a lot more. They knew that other people were going to be seeing their project, so they, you know, took a little bit more time with it.
Are there particular digital skills that you think they became more adept at over the course of time, or things that they had not thought about in their own research process or with the teachers that you worked with and the ways that they had traditionally done assignments like this? Like, how did the research process itself change, and what were they thinking about as they were doing this digital writing in terms of the thoughts they were having, but also the skills that they were gaining and how they were organizing their information and things like that?
Well, I think that you have to understand that right before this, we did kind of a unit on digital literacy and the internet and understanding, you know, the story behind the story and how it's all put together. So it's a good follow-up talking about censorship and that students were able to be better consumers of the knowledge that's out there, and they were a lot more critical, I think, as they were reading the different, you know, all the different information that we had kind of directed them to.
You directed them to things that were censored, and then they decided they should have been or not? Is that the kind of approach, or how did...
No, we did things like... we directed them to different authors that had been censored, very popular ones, you know, J.K. Rowling, Roald Dahl, Robert Kermir, Judy Blume, Ray Bradbury, Lois Lowry. This whole project came out of a program that I did with the Upper Peninsula Writing Project, where we did an author study at the Curlin Library, and I studied Lois Lowry, and so I actually had copies of documents from school boards and, you know, whatnot, correspondence when the giver was being blocked, you know, banned in different schools. So, mm-hmm. you know, we start with that kind of a conversation in the class, and then the kids move from there, and we moved into talking about free speech and Tinker versus Des Moines. And then I direct them, actually, in the project, they are directed to a link of, we take all, they're freshmen, so I take all the books, all of our required reading from 9th through 12th grade, and we look at them and say, they go to the sites and they say, do you think they're banned or not? And, you know, is there any historical information there? And then at the end, they come to find out that they're all books that banned book lists. So.
Cool. Is it just me who's dropped out, or is everyone else
here?
We're here. We're just sleeping.
Yeah, there's a little conversation in the chat room about how late it's getting for some of us.
Well, you know, I was wondering about if there was some conversation about Google Apps. I'm surprised. Some people have Google. You were using Google Apps, is that right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And was it limited, or, I mean, did you limit your students to, were they allowed to use their email just as email, or how did they, that was a conversation that flew by up there, but yeah, go ahead.
Right. I was lucky to be in a school that was, I don't know if we're fairly liberal, but they didn't really pay attention to what we were doing, and I was more of the notion of beg forgiveness afterward than get permission, and so... Actually, the first day that we signed up for Google Apps, I just put the $10 and put it on my credit card and ordered the 200, email accounts, and then started setting
it
up.
You didn't even have the education part. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, it is free for educators now. But yeah, go ahead.
Hello?
Oh, what just happened?
Was that
app
doesn't
work?
Hello?
Connection.
Yeah. So, yeah, so it was a new, you know, they had open access to their email. And aside from this project, one of the best features of Google Apps is sharing the writing and the power, you know, projects or whatever they were working on with the teacher and other students in their writing groups, and mm-hmm. being able to, you know, collaborate is to me the best feature of using the Google applications and Good Docs specifically.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we did let them, you know, have access to their email. You know, amazingly, if kids know that you have their username and password, and they all have other email accounts that they use for their personal life, just like we do, you know, multiple email accounts, and it was never really a problem.
Yeah, and Susan was saying that this is their work email. So, yep, that works. I agree. Yeah.
All right. Well, I know we are getting close to time here. We have some of the kind of closing conversation chat happening, and it's getting close to bedtime for those of us on the East Coast. So I threw out a question there for panelists to kind of think about, and this is what I hope to close each week's session with. And it's a conversation that's also happening on the Ning. Can I make a shameless plug for the Ning right now, too, Paul? Is that
please,
okay?
Yeah. Please.
I actually beg permission rather than ask for whatever I was doing. There it is. But basically, my question right now is, like, what's the one digital writing tool that is on your mind and that you think is essential for using with kids? And if you could frame your response kind of in the form of a why this matters for a writing workshop approach, and if you could even frame it even more around the topic of tonight, around choice and inquiry, that would be even better. So who would want to jump in? Is there one digital writing tool?
I'll go first.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
You know, I use a lot of different tools in class, but as far as, like, when it comes to the writing workshop approach, I'm giving the nod to Youth Voices because it's a publishing platform and it's open to a lot of people. And so, you know, as much as I like Google Docs for a lot of reasons, and there's some similarities I know with what I'm saying, the thing that's probably had the most impact on my teaching is having my students get their stuff out there into a large audience of students and their teachers so that it's in kind of an educational setting so that we can teach online writing and online composition skills, whether it's writing or photography or audio or video, and then how to talk to each other. Because I think that's a skill that, you know, we mentioned the USA Today story earlier. You know, people more and more need to learn how to talk to each other well, about even when they disagree.
All right. Thank you very much. I'm trying to collect these links and throw them in the chat room. So that was great. Penny, what are you thinking?
Well, I just posted on the writing part. I would go back to digital commentary. It was the first thing that I really jumped into with my kids when I wanted them to move beyond blogs and a few just posting of words, and watching kids take images, little videos, sound, weaving these things together into a composition that had such life. It was absolutely incredible in my room, and the way they depended on each other, you know, does anyone know how to download a song from here? Oh, I do. And it was that wonderful community of people supporting each other. So I still think engaging kids in that commentary, which has such currency, they see it all the time. This video commentary is a great way to introduce kids to what these tools can do.
Cool. And do you have a particular program that you use based on what you have available in your school or one that you prefer?
Well, I love iMovie, and I started by borrowing all the Macs from the animation room upstairs in art. But since then, I've learned Movie Maker, which I still don't like because it's free on all those PCs that my kids either bring in on their own or that we have in our labs. I'm trying to learn Final Cut, but I'm pretty bad at it, so I got some more work to do there.
Yeah, I would be curious too, and again, this might be another conversation, but I've been trying to find like an online video editing tool, and Jump Cut was there for a while, and I never really played with it that much, and then it was gone. So if anyone who does digital storytelling, I know someone just mentioned VoiceThread, which is one model, but I'm actually thinking like the actual timeline, putting movies together just like you would in iMovie or Windows Movie Maker. If anyone knows of an online tool for that, that would be great. So, all right, thanks. And Sarah, what are you thinking if you have one digital tool to recommend and kind of connect it to a digital writing workshop pedagogy?
Well, I have to agree with both Penny and Chris that movie making and Youth Voices are two definitely great tools. But I'm going to throw out WikiSpaces, especially for some of the early younger teachers. I think that it's a good arena for kids to kind of get in the habit of creating their digital space. They can, you know, post video that they create there. They can put links to favorite places on the web. They can, you know, collaborate on research projects and really make those kind of early web connections. So I'm going to throw out WikiSpaces just because it happens to be one of my favorites.
All right. Well, thank you. And I also see.
Can I throw in?
Oh yeah, go ahead. Throw it in.
I just want to say the telephone. Yeah, right. I just want to say the telephone. I'm getting more and more excited about it. I have an ongoing assignment where kids are responding in like journal-like writing, but on Youth Voices in a place called What's Up, 5 times a week about the books they're reading, which seems like a lot. But then I turn to them and say, but one of those times you have to call in your response, and like the lights go on in their eyes, you know. And so we have it set up so that they, when they call into this number, and we're using drop.io, it goes up as an MP3. You know, when they can then do that with video and images and stuff with their phone, I think that's the telephone is what it's all about. Pretty fast here. You know, I'm not the only one who thinks that, but.
If I'm understanding you correctly, they're calling in and leaving the essential of like an MP3 that just attaches as a commentary on Youth Voices. Is that right?
That's right. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. That's great.
What tool are you actually using to do that? I know you...
Again, drop.io gives you a telephone number you can call, and it automatically makes it into an MP3, which attaches to an RSS feed, which we then pull into Youth Voices. So that's how we're...
Cool.
Quickly, that's how we're doing it, yeah.
Very cool.
And, you know, there are other services like that, but, yeah, that's sort of our... what we've tried to pull together. Troy, I want to make sure you leave enough time to talk about next week, or you maybe were planning to do that, but and the week after a little bit.
Yep, actually, good transition here. Is this the URL? Is that what I'm just, did I find the right one?
Yep, that's it. Yep.
Sweet. And, yep. I'll be checking that out. So first of all, thank you to Penny and Chris and Sarah for being here tonight, and for Penny again for the foreword that you provided for the book, and Chris and Sarah for the examples that you provided for the book. I was very fortunate to have a really strong network of people, in part because of Teachers Teaching Teachers and my work with the National Writing Project, and was able to use a number of examples in the book, and I'm very fortunate that everybody who is featured in the book will also be featured on this show either tonight or next week or the week after. And so next week, when we get back together on October 7th, we are going to be looking at this idea of author's craft in digital writing. And we're going to have Dawn Reed, who will be talking about her experience with the podcasting project. I know she's been on the show before and talked a bit about that, but we'll be thinking specifically about author's craft and what it means to craft audio texts.
It'll be interesting to catch up. She's been at a new school for a couple of years now. So
yeah. She has, yep.
Catch up with her, too, yeah. Go ahead.
Yep. Yeah. And then another Red Cedar colleague, Aram Kabodian, who has done digital stories and public service announcements with his middle school students, will be featured talking about the craft of digital storytelling. And then Sharon Murchie, who is also a Red Cedar consultant and was involved with this project, right, that I referenced a little bit earlier. She has multimedia senior projects that she has her students create, and she's going to talk a little bit about how they craft those projects and the research process that goes into them. And then finally, Shannon Powell, who is an undergraduate student of mine, but it's all now I can say a Chippewa River Writing Project teacher consultant, will be talking about how her thinking has evolved. I've been very fortunate to work with her over the past few years, and we've kind of worked together and just watching how she has changed her approach to teaching by using digital writing tools. She's going to talk a little bit about that as well. And then on Wednesday, October 14th, we're going to look at the topic of conferring and response. And we're going to have three guests that night. Melissa Pomerantz is going to talk about the ways in which she uses audio feedback to help lessen the grading and assessment load, but also to build better relationships with her kids. Heather Lewis, who's also a Red Cedar person and worked with us in Project Write, is going to talk about how she uses Google Docs to do a similar type of work, revising and helping build relationships with her writers. And then finally, Cliff Lee, who is now a graduate student at UCLA, is going to be talking about how he and his co-teachers, as well as students themselves, would respond to each other during some digital storytelling and community-based writing projects. So wow. We have a number of outstanding folks, and again, I thank all of them for contributing to the book and taking the time to be on the show. And I also just want to publicly thank you, Paul, for giving me the opportunity to talk about the book, and Susan as well. Just all the things I've learned from you and all the guests you've had on the show over the last few years. I'm glad that we're able to do this series with you. So thank you.
Troy, we have a problem. In the chat room, people are saying there are so many links and so much information and so much sharing from tonight that tomorrow, instead of calling in sick and not going to school, people are going to call in nerdy. To stay home and work on the links.
They got geeked. Oh, my goodness.
We have to reassure them that everything will be available online.
Yes, yes. And also, Sarah has been so kind as to put the link to the Ning in there. In the Ning, yeah. I have discussion forums for each chapter of the book, and those discussion forums have hyperlinks to all of the things that were referenced in the book, many of which were also mentioned tonight. So,
yeah, kudos, Troy, because that your site that accompanies the book, first of all, the book is great. But then the site that accompanies that, I think, is also something that's unique to what you're doing.
Thank you. I think there's someone who might be doing a research project on that here this semester.
Yes, we've been exploring the changing way in which I think teachers can engage in professional development through things like a companion website. So I think it's going to be very exciting.
Troy, I just want to throw in, too, as we're ending, in the past, sometimes we have a class assignment. We have a lot of students visit the show, and we just want to shout out a welcome. We've had a lot of people in tonight for the first time. It's been a crowded chat room, and we want to welcome you and hope you'll come back again.
Yep, I think that's great. I was trying to figure out what their assignment was exactly. I asked and didn't get a chance to go back and read it. But hopefully, if any of you have any questions, you can definitely get in touch with me through that Ning, too. So please join.
And if you're listening, I just want to say, if you're listening to this on your bike the way I do, the Ning is a very simple address. It's digitalwritingworkshop.ning.com. So you could scribble that down as soon as you get home and look it up. And that's an easy way to find the book as well, right?
It is, yep.
So I think we're finished, or do you have any other thoughts?
I think this has been a great show, and I'm looking forward to the next 2 weeks. Yeah. Okay. All right. Thanks a lot.
Right. And we do want to say that we've been broadcasting here over the EdTech Talk channel of the World Bridges Network. Thanks to Jeff Lebo and Dave Cormier. And thank you, Susan, for managing that chat room tonight and and broadcasting for us here, too. Good night, all.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks a lot, Troy.
Good night. Thank you.
Everybody.